Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Lazy CEO podcast. I'm Jane Liu. Join my conversations with the entrepreneurs behind the iconic brands we all know and love.
Hey, Potty Fam. I'm so excited that our next guest, she is the ultimate guru of personal finances, and I've learned so much from this chat myself, and I'm sure you will too. It's none other than the amazing Victoria Devine from the top-ranking podcast, She's on the Money. Victoria launched Zella in 2015 to provide mortgage and asset finance solutions and then made the life-changing pivot into the podcast world to create She's on the Money, which gets over a million downloads a month. She's also the author of three best-selling books, She's on the Money, Investing with She's on the Money, and Property with She's on the Money. In this episode, we talk about how you can get on top of your finances and how to better track your budget. And because there's just so much to talk about, we had to spill over to another episode where we talk about the ways that you can invest your money, the pros and cons of property investment, tips on how to get yourself out of debt, and how to manage lifestyle creep, and much, much more. Get your pen and paper out for this episode, and let's get into it.
Hello, Victoria.
Hello, how are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks so much for joining. This is so exciting. You've got such a wealth of knowledge and, oh my God, you're due soon.
I'm 37 and a half weeks now.
Oh, you squeezed us in.
I feel like everyone keeps asking me why I'm still working, but I feel like you would be similar. I'm like, well, I don't have anything else to do. No. I'm not just going to sit at home. Like, what do you want from me?
Also, I feel like this is the time to make the most of it. Like, this is when you want to like just go to dinner, go for a walk by yourself, get work done, uninterrupted work.
100%. And I feel so lucky that I'm like, this is my first baby, so there's no one else to look after right now. Like, it's just me and my husband, and we're having a really nice time, kind of just like counting down the days.
Yes. Oh my God. Oh, the peace and tranquility, if I can just think about, just reminisce about the time. Okay. So not a baby podcast. Don't worry, guys. Sometimes go on tangents. This is not one of them. What led you to where you are today? I feel like we've almost kind of had like an opposite journey because like I pivoted out of finance into where I am today and you've pivoted into finance.
But I would not want to do the finance that you did. Like, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I do it now day to day and you would too when you have to like look at financial reports and like just get stuff done. I'm like, I don't know how I was thinking that this might be an entire career.
Yeah.
But you were correct. I went from psychology and then into finance, but it was more financial advice than it was anything else. And I feel like I ended up there because I've always wanted to help people. Like I love helping people and I just like being part of the journey. I'm that person that, you know, growing up, I was like, I'll be a doctor. And that did not work out. Like one, I faint at the sight of blood. So good luck to me going into childbirth. But two, how was I ever going to help a patient? Like that was not going to work.
Oh my God.
Ended up in finance after realizing, I guess, how much of an impact it could have and the impact that it was having on me. Like I just got into heaps of personal debt. I had no idea what I was doing. I was living that finance life, like, you know, corporate girl life. Like I want to have the cutest corporate outfits and like they don't just come back when I was in that space. It was what, 2012? Like it was so hard to buy cute outfits.
Oh my God. So literally I resonate with this so much because I literally with my first job also just ended up with less money in the bank at the end of the year, also with debt actually. At that time when all the options were we had was like a cute outfit or like maybe Portman.
And they were so expensive.
This is kind of why we started doing workwear show posts. Segue. It was literally like your entire paycheck goes into a suit. And I remember once I spilled white out onto one of my suits and it was just heartbreaking. It's like breaking your iPhone now. It's like, oh my God.
Oh, no, that would have been the worst because I remember suiting being so important as well because as a young woman, you want to put your best foot forward and you'd always be like, especially in those more corporate spaces, like I'm in finance. I work, you know, at the time for a big four. Like it's not a place where you just turn up and be like, oh, I can just wear jeans. Mm. Like you want to not only look good, but compete with the big dog consultants.
Exactly. And my husband worked at Macquarie Bank. He wore the same suit every day.
Why is it so much easier?
But we can't.
Him? Why? No, and I don't want to do that either. Like if you told me I had to wear the same outfit every day, I'd be like, Jane, no, I don't think so.
So you got yourself into debt?
I did. And then I realized that that was holding me back and I really needed to change. So I started looking into ways that I could. And it was really hard. I felt like everybody in that space was really rude or condescending or overwhelming. And I just never felt like I could open up to anyone to talk about this. One thing led to another. I started to learn a lot more about financial literacy. And then, you know, Jane, if we'd gone to brunch back then, I would have been like, oh my God, Jane, so this week I learned about super. Like, how wild is that? And you would have been so over me because I was like a broken record consistently talking at brunch about like, oh my God, I'm going to do a budget and cash flow, doing super. Oh my gosh, I'm getting my insurances together. And I was so excited about it. I would have loved it. Yeah, I mean, you might have. Other people were a bit sick of it. And so I ended up, you know, segueing into the space work-wise and then not loving it because I was working for ultra high net wealth clients. And like, I didn't like making super rich people richer when they had no level of gratitude for what they already had.
Mm.
Like talking to people who are so wealthy, that would be like, yeah, whatever, Victoria, like you
just
did the financial
go do
plan,
it.
Just
yeah.
get it done. Like, why don't you care? Like you have so much power. Anyway, I started doing these lunch and learn sessions very selfishly because I wanted to engage with people my age and I was so sick of working in this like net wealth space that I was like, what if I just did like lunch and learns and got some clients who are a bit younger? And I thought, what about like a baby lawyer? Like a baby lawyer one day is going to be a big lawyer and that'll be a good client for me. So I'll start now and I'll get a heap of them. So I started doing these lunch and learns called She's on the Money. And ultimately that then became a Facebook group where the people that went to my workshops would join and they would be like, oh my gosh, V, like I have this question after your session and we'd answer it publicly. And it just became this beautiful space to talk openly about money. And then people would message me and be like, oh, hey, my sister Jane, she didn't go to your workshop, but like, I think she'd get something out of this. Can she join? I'd be like, babe, the more the merrier. Like, that's fine. And then we birthed a podcast where we had 1,700 members. And I remember thinking that was the most amount of people that I had even thought of in my life. I thought, oh my God.
Well, that's a lot. Think about public speaking. Think about those amount of people in the room.
Terrifying, yeah. Right? Like I'd never even been in a room of that many people. I was like, this is wild. Even if we could, and this is still me thinking I was going to be a financial advisor for my entire career. Even if I could get like 5% of this like group into being clients of mine, I've got a really solid finance business. Like this is going to be lit. Little did I know that that podcast would blow up and we've gone from having, you know, 1,700 members to nearly 300,000.
Wow.
And now we are, as you know, Jane, the number one business podcast in Australia, which is insane.
Incredible. What do you have? 1.2 million downloads a month?
At the moment, yeah.
Oh my God. I don't want to look at my numbers. That's incredible. And it's long form content.
Yeah. That's why I think it's crazy because everyone's always like, what's your secret? How do you do it? I'm like, if we're being honest, I have no idea. We do 3 episodes a week, a Monday, a Wednesday, and a Friday. And we sometimes drop an occasional bonus episode because I get really excited if I can get like some cool guests on the show. That has kind of worked out and it is long form content, or most of our episodes are just over half an hour. So good for a commute, but yeah, we still don't know how it works.
I love this like pivot that you have, realizing helping the rich isn't making you happy, even though that is like maybe clearly where the money, the clear path is. Like that is what I guess a financial planner, that's the trajectory.
That's what you want. And it sounds hypocritical, right? Like when you become a financial planner, having really rich clients is perfect. And I fell into that really wealthy space. And when I say like ultra high net wealth, I was only working with clients who had a minimum of $10 million investable.
Wow.
So we weren't talking like, oh, you got your first million, like it would have to be 10.
Yeah. Yeah, to invest.
Not like they're worth $10 million. They have $10 million that I could play with, essentially. It was a really nice space to be in because I did learn a lot, but it also was really disengaging because when I first started in finance, as you would have, Jane, you don't earn anything. Yeah. You're earning like between 45 and maybe 60 grand. And at that point you think that's lit and you're like, this is the most amount of money I've had in my entire life.
Yes.
But there was that juxtaposition between, you know, I think at the time when I was doing proper financial advice, I was on maybe like 85, 90, which is a good salary. But I was walking into rooms with trust fund kids who were being allocated $400,000 a year to play with. And they would argue with their families about having to go to Christmas and being like, this is bullshit. All my friends are going to the Bahamas. I want to go to the Bahamas.
Oh, I don't want my kids to be like that. Oh my God. That's
no. Terrible. And their grandparents being like, well, we have the trust fund set up and in the family constitution, like you have to come to Christmas to get your trust fund, which do you know what? I'd be like, do you want to adopt me? Cause I'll come to Christmas for 400 grand. Like I am there with bells on. Like, do you want me to wear an outfit in particular? Like I'm here.
I'll sing a song. I'll learn your favorite carols.
I'll learn how to flip. Like, what do you want? So I just remember being like, wow, I would come out of this session with like a family constitution meeting or something like that and just go, this is so messed up. Like I'm here paying off my $40,000 worth of debt. I am paying rent. I have to go home to housemates. Like, I don't know if I can afford, you know, to go on the girls' trip that my girlfriends have planned for the weekend after now because I fucked up and bought another outfit at Q. Like, it's one of those things that I was like, these worlds are so different. I don't think I ever actively said, this isn't for me. But I definitely wasn't motivated to get up in the mornings. I just felt like it wasn't helping me thrive. And then when I started doing these lunch and learns, it was never so I could segue into that. It was so that I could feel something, so that I could, you know, go in and feel like I was really helping women like me. Because the more you work in that finance space, the more you realize there's such a block of the advice that is accessible to young women. And you just go, oh, in these meetings, these people aren't valuing it because it's expected, but like my girlfriends would benefit from this so much and it would just take me an hour to explain it. And I guess that's where those lunch and learns came from because I was like, oh, it would just take me an hour. And if I go quickly over saving and investment and super and insurances and what that means. And I mean, when I originally started these lunch and learns, it was for everybody. It wasn't called She's on the Money, but it was kind of like a Zella lunch and learn. And so I did them, but over time realized that the women in the room would not ask questions. They would not put their hands up in front of their male colleagues. And I thought, what if I just did women? Like, is that, you know, am I going to get in trouble for that? I don't know, but that's something I wanted to try. And so I trialed having a women only one. And that's where She's on the Money came from. They thrived. When you get women in a room together, they lift each other up. And I was just like, this is the feeling I want to capture. And I guess I got a bit greedy and wanted to start a Facebook group so I could stay in contact with everybody and answer their questions. And no one was paying me. I didn't know I could get paid for this. Like, this was just something that I was passionate about. And so I think that over time, I never actively chose to move into podcasting because even when I started my podcast, it was, we're going to do 12 episodes. I'm going to do them completely holistic. So we'll go from money stories all the way through to insurance and inheritances, and that will be it. And if you ever ask me anything, I can be like, look, I did this little podcast series. Go listen to that. But in that first season, it blew up and we became number one. And people were like, when's the second season? And I was like, oh, this is awkward. There wasn't going to be one.
That's just incredible. Like, that's when like the product comes first. The problem comes first and then like everything else just follows when you solve that problem. And remember my parents when they first chose to invest and they just don't have the access. It's having that access to information. When they finally started making money that they could invest something, they bought an apartment and they lost money. They bought shares and lost all of it in the tech boom. That's why they were like, you shouldn't start a business.
It's so risky, right?
I've heard you say like, it's your relationship with money is shaped by your family. So I was like quite risk averse because, but I don't act like it, but like I should be more risk averse.
You're like, I was risk averse. And then I realized it wasn't that risky because you actually knew what you were doing.
well, I don't know.
You're like, this is working. Let's keep doing it.
How's that growth journey been?
Kind of crazy, but really well supported. So I think one of the things I did and I've always known is that I can't be everything to everybody. So I've always outsourced production. It's not me sitting at the, you know, microphone and then going and editing everything and, you know, putting it up and saying I'm 100% this is me. It did involve an initial investment. And like, I mean, my first season cost me thousands of dollars. And it wasn't because I thought I'd get a return. It was because I was excited about it. And I thought this is a really cool project. And like, you know, ultimately, Jane, it was going to bring me a couple of new clients, wasn't it? Hopefully that investment would have been worth it. And it did. And it maxed out my advice practice, which was really nice. I ended up selling my financial advice practice in September 2022, right before I got married.
Wow, that's awesome.
Just because She's on the Money was going so well. I had started a bigger stream of mortgage broking and getting people into their first homes. And like, I just didn't have the capacity anymore to take on new clients and do one-on-one advice. And I think lots of business owners get to this point where you know you have so many plates in the air and you're like, something's going to drop. Like, I can't maintain this. You know, I was about to get married. My husband and I, or my future husband at the time, and I were talking about when we might be able to have babies. And he's so baby obsessed. Like, he would have had babies way back when we met if it was up to him.
You stalled as far as you could.
Yeah, we thought about this. And I just said, I don't think I can maintain three separate businesses and have them all be good. We made the decision to sell that. But yeah, it's, She's on the Money kind of like took off, but it was always rolling forward. So in my second season, like halfway through my second season, I joined a network and they don't do a lot. I'm still very, very independent, but having that consulting team that I can go to and be like, hey, so we're thinking about this. And they're like, well, the market's doing this fee. Like, what does that look like? And then they introduced me to advertising and being able to put ads on my podcast. I didn't even know you could make money from podcasts before this. And so that was really cool. And we've always reinvested the money that has been made by She's on the Money back into She's on the Money. So that's when we could start going, all right, we'll update branding. You know, I'll hire someone who can help me pull together content. I'll hire, you know, a graphic designer full time. And the team has gone from just being me, like trying to figure it out and using a lot of people on Fiverr. Like, I would outsource a lot to Fiverr.
Yes.
To now there are eight of us in the She's on the Money team, which is really cool.
That's incredible to have like built this team working on like something you're so passionate about.
Oh, it's
like,
so cool, Jane. I always feel like I need to pinch myself because I always assumed She's on the Money wouldn't make money to be able to support other people. And I have my mortgage broking business now, and that is like the, you know, the quote real business behind what I get to do. But it's never had to be leaned on for funding for She's on the Money or anything like that. It kind of just does its own thing and it supports these women. And I have this beautiful team of people who are equally passionate about, you know, financial literacy for women and creating content and having fun. And we just honestly have the best time. And I think that that is what means our content is always really fresh and exciting in the finance space, like as exciting as it can get, Jane. But it's really driven because we know you, because we are you. We're not just like out working at one of the big banks and think you need to learn about X. We're like listening to our community and going, oh my gosh, they're asking more about this. How do we lean into that? What can we do here? How can we make this feel more, you know, approachable and less judgmental? Like, what could we do here and here? So I'm really proud of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just like the way your podcast, for someone who doesn't know, understand much about finance, you don't feel stupid. You just feel enlightened.
That's because you're not. You've just never learned the language before.
Yeah. And I love the, what you were saying before about how like the women actually in the lunch and learn situation wouldn't put their hands up and wouldn't ask questions. And there's this confidence bias that men have, you know, especially in the workforce, that women just don't. And yeah, it's so amazing that you're empowering them. In terms of like selling a business, I feel like that is like actually such a big decision. Like people, you know, what you say no to is as important as what you say yes to. And like for us, I remember that juncture where we were like, we decided to close the bricks and mortar stores to actually close something that was profit making. to focus on something else because of the potential there. It's not there yet.
You don't, it's not guaranteed.
You're just backing it, backing the horse. Yeah, like that is actually such a tough decision to make.
That was exactly the same as me in a way. I mean, you're a juggernaut in comparison to what the size of my business was, but my wealth business, I didn't want to lose the brand. Like Zella is my baby. I created it. It's actually my grandmother's name. And I knew that I didn't want someone else running that, but I didn't want to lose the clients. Like I didn't want them to just be left high and dry. So a very big part of selling that business was working out who would purchase it, because who wants to purchase essentially a book of clients without a brand associated with it. So we had to like, basically my sale ended up being in three parts. So I separated my clients into three main categories and they went to different homes. So that was even more confusing because I wasn't just selling, quote, the business. I was actually breaking up my business into three different sections, three different client types. And then they went to three different pre-existing financial advice practices that I trusted.
That's very clever.
A little bit complicated.
Yeah, that's very clever. And it's a very good experience for your client base to be like, you've got something that's
It was fun. And I think.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
One of my favorite things about it is I'm still friends with so many of my clients. Mm. Like we chat on Instagram. Like they still message me when they're having, if they're celebrating something or they're like about to do something. Because being a financial advisor, I've said this before on my own show, I just think it's such a special experience. And it sounds lame when I say that, but you have such a, and you might find this if you have an advisor, but it's a more intimate experience than going to the doctor. Like your financial advisor knows your medical history. Like they know if you like your husband or not. They know where your, you know, financial goals are. They know if you're going to be trying for a baby and if you need any support there. Like I knew everything about my clients and I think I still miss that a little bit because like one, I'm pervy. But two, that trust was so beautiful.
It's like most relationships, you talk about everything except finance. So then once that is out in the open, like everything else is like, it's just you form that level of trust.
It's crazy, right?
Hey Polly fam, I've got something special for you. For a limited time only, I have a discount code for my business course. In case you didn't know, the course is a blueprint for starting an online business and growing it to 7 or 8 figures. It's 10 modules of videos that you can watch at your own pace, covering everything from sourcing product, growing and developing your product range, operations, and marketing and scaling your business. Just use the code PODCAST at checkout at thelazyceo.com. I've got a bunch of burning questions for you. Some of them are also from the team. It'll be like a lunch and learn for the Showpo team and our listeners.
I like it.
How do you get control of your financial situation? Like, what are the foundational steps you would take?
I really wish that this response was like super sexy and I'm like, all right, Jane, sit down. But it's not sexy. It's just really basic. And it's, I want to say it's not what you want to hear, but it's not what you want to hear because nobody wants to do the work. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, it's about understanding four numbers. So I need you to understand what you earn. And most people could tell me that, like any of your team could probably be like, yeah, I know what I earn. I've got X coming into my bank account every month. The second thing I want to know is what you spend. And that's much harder. So can you tell me how many dollars leave your bank account each month? So you might be able to tell me how many come in, but like how many are actually leaving and what for? Then I want you to be able to articulate to me exactly what you owe. So we might have a credit card. We might have, you know, Afterpay. We might have a few different things going on, or you might owe your mom $150. But like off the top of your head, is that a number? Or do you just know, oh, I've got Afterpay, don't really know what's on it? Like we need to know specific numbers. And then I want you to know what you own. And more often than not, people will be like, I don't have anything. And I'll be like, well, actually you do. Like you have some assets. You might have a car. You might have some superannuation. You might have some savings in a savings account or an emergency fund. Like, what does that come to? Because over time, these numbers shift and change. And like right now, if you look at my earn, spend, own and owe, like my owe is through the roof. Like I owe more than I own right now because I have a couple of mortgages that I have recently taken on and like I haven't paid them off yet, Jane. Like, so if you look at it, you go, sometimes you have to take a few steps back to take a heap forward. And I know that hopefully by the time I'm like 45, that won't be an issue. But right now, it's not that sexy. But I think we need to understand those four numbers. And to do that, it's really about sitting down and doing a budget. And no one wants to do a budget because you feel like they restrain you. But when I talk about budgeting, I'm not talking about sitting down and limiting yourself. I'm saying, sit down, Jane, let's go through your bank statement. What are you spending each and every single week? And the question isn't what can you reduce? It's what are you happy with? Like you might go, V, I'm not changing. I am going to get a coffee every single morning. And I'll be like, same queen. Then we might go through and you've got a subscription to a gym. And I'll be like, well, when was the last time you went? You'll be like, I don't know. I don't even like it. I just have it because like I want to get fit. Like I want to be better. And I'll be like, okay, well, what if we got rid of it for a little while and just saw how we went? And if you decided that getting rid of it was too much and you wanted it back, we can go get it back. That's much easier than feeling like you're limiting yourself and going, all right, well, I'm going to cut everything out of my budget. I'm going to stop spending so much on coffee and groceries because I'm very much a we have to enjoy the journey as much as the destination kind of finance gal, not a strip everything back, don't spend a single cent, feel guilty when you do, because everyone is different. Like one of my best friends, obsessed with F45, I could not think of anything worse. Like good luck getting me to the gym. So her spending $75 a week on F45 is a value to her. Mm. And it's not a bad thing. But if that was in my budget, it wouldn't make sense. So there's not a right or wrong, because she might look at my budget and be like, V, come 3 coffees a day last week. And I'll be like, still not changing.
Mm. So it's about knowing what your like non-negotiables are. I think in business, when we have like a project and an ask, it's like you have your must-haves and your could-haves and your should-haves. If you break it down, like what do you really need? Like what really makes you happy? And I've got my assistant Caitlin here just, you know, producing away. My financial situation has significantly changed since my $24,000 a year job in corporate. But
see, I still can't believe that was a thing. Like, surely you were being underpaid. Like, surely.
Oh, I remember I was 23 and then they sent us an email being like, oh, we're going to increase you to 24. I'm like, even they knew it was low. Like, we got a pay rise before we even started because they knew it was too low. But I never like looking at my bank statement.
It's because of your money story. It's because you haven't addressed your money story.
Even
going
now,
way
I don't
too
want
deep
to look.
Here.
I'm terrified of my bank.
Let me do it. I'll come into your office and we'll sit down and we'll go through stuff and you'll feel empowered. But I just look at it and I go, your money story needs to be addressed before we actually address your budget. Because I could sit you down and we could go through your budget and change it and I could set it up and it would be perfection. And you would be like, yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to be a billionaire. But if you're not understanding why you spend the way you spend or why you avoid looking at things, we're going to fall back into that trap again. So something that I think is really important to understand is money stories, and they frame how you think, feel, act, and behave around money. So, you know, if you grew up, you know, with the background you were saying, Jane, you might get analysis paralysis looking at it because your parents have ingrained in you that you might lose some money if you invest in a share market. You might lose, you know, money if you started a business. I mean, you've just been yoloing out here and you're like, I'm not going to listen to them and do what I want. But you might be overwhelmed because you have some level of financial trauma. But the same could be true if you grew up really wealthy, right? So if you grew up in a really wealthy family, maybe you're getting yourself in a lot of credit card debt because there's no pain associated with money for you. Like, you might just tap your credit card and be like, YOLO, I'll work it out later. Like, I have not grown up in a situation where I don't have anything. I've always been able to fall back on my wealthy parents to pay it off. But if you grew up in a frugal situation and money was really sparse, you might come into money and then making big financial decisions makes you feel sick and you don't know why you put them off. But the reason you're putting them off is because money inherently is linked to not having enough and loss and feeling as though you're going to lose everything. So I think understanding your money story and where you've come from and what that looks like is going to mean that we don't bury our heads in the sand anymore. So it's really important to understand where our money stories come from so that we can make decisions around money that actually empower us instead of hold us back. And a lot of the time, we don't know that we're holding ourselves back until we step back and go, hold on, if I think about my first money memory, what was it? If I think about how big purchases impact me, I do get a bit anxious. Like, let's think about why I might get a little bit anxious about this. Because I know that one of my first money memories, and like, my parents were not poor, they were middle income earners. Like, there was not the thing that I went without. I still remember when I was little feeling really guilty in like grade four about pulling out my school camp forms because I remember looking at them and seeing how much it was and being like, oh my God, that's so much money. I feel really bad because, you know, maybe the week before or something, my mum had told me, no, honey, we don't have the money for that. Like, we can't buy X, Y, Z. And I just remember getting those school camp forms and leaving them in the bottom of my bag for a while because I was just like, oh, I don't want to ask mum for that. That makes me feel really bad. Mm. And that's me in grade four. So like, we need to look back on that because that had hindered me, this idea that maybe there's not enough. Maybe there's this, that, or the other. And I think that once we can understand that, we're in such a better position to understand our finances and how we make decisions.
Say someone like with your exact example, like when someone's to reflect on their money story and come to this conclusion and then they've done their budget, like how do you practically, what do you do with it?
You create a spreadsheet and then from having, you know what, you don't even have to create a spreadsheet. There's one that's free you can download from my website if you want it. Oh,
perfect.
But you need to track it. So we need to write it down somewhere. Some people prefer writing it in a notebook. Some people prefer having it on a spreadsheet or, you know, just a Word document. I don't care how you track it. I actually do not. All I want you to do is track it. But then the linking part of that is like, I feel like you might be the same as me. We make plans. You are probably a gun at creating a very sexy spreadsheet. And then you save it on your desktop and you never open it again.
Mm-hmm.
And you just leave it.
Yeah.
What we need to do is link that to our banking. So we need to make sure that we know where our money is coming in and where it's flowing and automate what we can automate. So if you know every week I need to spend X on groceries, that money gets transferred over to a spending account and we don't touch the rest. So I think automation is actually the key to making sure that we stay on track. And we can always go in and fiddle with it later, like if it's not right. And budgeting does take a little bit to get correct.
Mm-hmm.
I am the type of person who goes into my budget and changes it every 3 or 4 months anyway, because my values change so often. Like I have ADHD. It can't be predicted. Like I've got a new hobby next week and week after next, I'll be like, I don't even like that. What are you talking about, Jane? So I change it all the time, but it's about saving it somewhere that you do look at all the time. And my team, obviously, the second you join my team, I'm like, all right, Jane, sit down. what are we doing about your financial life? Like, I know what I'm paying you. Like, I want to do your budgeting cash flow, obviously, only if they want to.
Yeah.
But a couple of them have now saved their cash flow plans as the backgrounds on their computer so that now they just see it all the time. And like, it's really front facing. And like, I'm so proud of so many of my team members because they're like, yep, look at my savings V. Look at, you know, what I've got in an emergency fund. And it's positions they've never been in their lives.
It's like a vision board, but for the now, it's like clarity.
The vision board, but it's your money board.
Your money board, exactly. Well, it buys you the freedom to, you know, get what you want. I love that. Tracking everything to a spreadsheet, putting it into a budget. How does one budget?
If you want me to say you need to allocate 10% to savings and this percent, which is what I think a lot of people expect, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
So I had Glenn James on the podcast and I actually asked him this. I was like, we were like, where do you invest? Where do you invest? And he said something quite brilliant. And we used Caitlin as an example. And he's like, you should invest in yourself as a 20-year-old. Because this isn't the time to like...
to put pressure on yourself.
Life is important. You want to invest in your like future income. I do get that it's not like... practically, you should be like... you shouldn't necessarily walk out of your 20s with a lot of savings.
No. And I think that we put so much pressure on ourselves because we see it online, right? So like I'm on the same page as Glenn. Glenn and I are good mates. We text like every couple of days. Like... I think because we're in the same space and we're just like both passionate about the same thing, we vibe off each other. But he's right. And that's where it comes back to this like budget and cash flow idea, because a lot of people will be like, but V, can you just tell me how much I meant to save? And I go, okay, well, if I sat you down and said, all right, Jane, you earn $40,000 a year, you need to save 10%. You're a mum, you have two kids. That is not appropriate. Like that is just going to make you feel like trash because you've only got $40,000. We're in a cost of living crisis and you're putting so much pressure on yourself to survive. But if you then earned $400,000 and you were in exactly the same situation, I'd be like, yeah, Jane, I do think you should have some capacity to save.
Like, where are you blowing your cash?
Exactly. Like, let's sit down because I'm pretty sure you should be able to save at least 10% of your income. But if we then apply that same rule to someone who has a completely different financial situation, it's just going to make them feel like trash because it's not achievable. It's not accessible. And in our 20s, we are building our careers, we are building our relationships, we're working out who we even are. And yes, I think investing is important, but that's why I'm always talking about small amounts of investment. I'm not saying, Jane, in your 20s, you need to get to your first 100 grand invested. I'm saying, let's start with a micro investing platform. Let's start with a share trading platform where you have a couple of dollars on there. We're talking like you might contribute 10 bucks a week. We're not trying to create wealth now. We are trying to create financial literacy because you are investing in your future self. So when you're in your 30s and you have more income and you have the power, you already know where it's going. You're not scared of it. You're not overwhelmed. You're not burying your head in the sand and going, I wish I'd started this earlier. You're kind of like starting a little snowball because that snowball over time is going to gain speed and go down the mountain and get bigger. So it's not about sacrificing your lifestyle now, which is why I said before, like, good luck prying my coffee from my cold dead hands. Like, pregnant or not, like, that is what gets me to work every day. And I think that too many times we see people online talking about how I invested my first 100K by the time I was 25. And you're just like, unrelatable. Like, that's not me. And so instead of being inspired by it, you wipe it off completely and go, that content is not for me. Investing must not be for me because I'm not willing to make that sacrifice. Neither. So let's not make the sacrifice. Let's build this wealth over time, because when it comes to money, when it comes to investing, the best type of investing, it's the really boring stuff. And it should take time. You should check your portfolio and be like, bleh, not much has changed. Because day to day, not much changes, Jane. But when you look back over 10 years, everything is different.
It's like you can't just be sitting there hitting that refresh button.
Just doesn't work. Whether you are doing stuff in a relationship, whether you are, you know, talking about money, whether you're talking about kids, like you look at me 10 years ago, holy heck, I'm such a different person. But like if I was checking in on myself every day and going, am I different? Am I better? I'd be like, I don't know. Like that's not, I'm the same person I was yesterday to me. But over time, big things happen. And I think that we need to be aware of that. And what are the building blocks? And to me, the building blocks are the basics. And that's budget, and cash flow and just getting those ducks in a row, understanding how you can stay out of debt. If you can't stay out of debt right now, not crucifying yourself for having to lean on something like that, because we're just all doing the best we can.
It kind of is like similar to the my advice for like people getting into business. I'm like, you should just start something, start a little mini side hustle. So you know how to build a website. So you know how like to set this up, and you kind of just have a basic understanding of business. So then when you get your $1 million idea, when you're onto something, you know exactly what you need to do. You've already made your little mistakes on your smaller investments, and you're more equipped. And like you said, you know, just it's about gaining financial literacy and just being more comfortable with money and finance before, you know, you start making bigger bucks and having more to invest.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that a lot of people just assume that to be wealthy and to have money is really aligned to intelligence. Like, you've got to be the smartest, right? You don't. You just have to be consistent. It's the same as business ownership. Like, I don't know how I've gotten this far. I've just made it up. Like, you'd be the same when it comes to starting your business. Like, I had not heaps of money. All right, I'll work out how to make a website. Let's just dive in and see what that's about. All right. And
normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need to work out what this looks like. I'm hiring my first staff member. What the heckin'? Like, you just make it up. And the same happens with money. Like, you just start learning. And I think so many times we crucify ourselves because we don't know. And you go, well, why don't I know this? I'm so silly. It's like saying, I don't know how to speak French. And I'll be like, well, who taught you? And you go, well, no one. You go, well, that makes sense that you don't know how to speak French. Money is exactly the same. If no one sat you down and been like, here's how to budget, here's how to cash flow, here's what an investment looks like, this is what an ETF is, do you want to talk about managed funds? That sounds really overwhelming. But if you've learned the language, it doesn't overwhelm you.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, I think that too many times we just assume it's because we're silly. We're not silly, we're women. We're basically geniuses.
Hey, Potty fam, thanks for listening. Tune in for part 2, which is out now, where we talk about the ways you can invest your money, the pros and cons of property investment, tips on how you can get yourself out of debt, and how to manage lifestyle creep. See you in the next episode.
Okay, that's it from me for now. Thanks for listening. And if you're loving the podcast, don't forget to leave us a review. And if you want more, join the conversation on the podcast Instagram at the Lazy CEO _podcast. Link to the show notes. Catch you next Tuesday.